I went to the movies this week, and I saw the Lego Batman movie. It was as awful in the noisy, hyperactive way that you probably imagine. It was also completely unrealistic, combining a world made out of Lego bricks and unbelievable contrivances from the Batman world. There's this jarring scene where the Lego Batman character is sitting in his Lego recliner with his Lego cup, watching on his Lego TV, he's watching a regular human movie, a romantic drama with human characters on this Lego home screen. But for all its weirdness and my wondering how much longer I was going to have to endure it, the movie was actually about mental health and the damage and depression that come from isolation. It's essentially the message of the gospel, in which we have a man possessed by demons. Now, this was a scary scenario in Jesus' time, a naked man running around a cemetery, so strong that he couldn't be restrained and needing to be cast out of the community for the safety of all. This is still a scary scenario today, and we still don't have good answers for how to care for the severely mentally ill among us. But you don't have to be having a formal diagnosis to know that there are legions of demons loose among us and inhabiting us. Some of those demons enter us through social media. Some come through the news media. Some enter through ads that create needs that drive us to get some baubles. Some of us have demons of anxiety about financial issues or health problems or relationship issues. These demons can depress us even when we don't get a diagnosis of clinical depression, but which of course they may lead to. But they depress us. They can destroy our relationships with our friends and with our community. They cause rifts in families and churches. The man with the demons in the Bible story was driven by them to the unclean places of his time, cemeteries and pigsties. Our demons drive us to unclean places too. Perhaps it's to a group where people gossip and spread malicious rumors, either in person or online. Perhaps it's to some websites that exploit other people or support values that marginalize, hurt, and attack others. Perhaps they drive you into a habit that replaces the time that would be better spent with family and friends. Perhaps they drive you to excessive shopping or, well, you know what it is that drives you away from the places where God is. And so the demons that drive us to these unclean places, these demons may not be red with tails, but instead, they may be rooted in the fear we have of what other people think about us. It's that fear, that need to be accepted by others, the fear of not being liked or admired by the cool people, the fear that lures us into those self-destructive behaviors, the behaviors that separate us from family and trap us in places where we're no longer able to break free. Those fears are the demons that haunt us. We're afraid that the cool people will find out who we really are and reject us. And that paralyzing fear keeps us from becoming what God intends us to be, keeps us from being the people that God created us to be, from living the lives of joy that God intends for us. Naming these demons that possess you, naming these demons is the beginning of expelling them, of rejecting their control over you. Naming has long been seen as a means of control. Parents get to name their children. Jesus invites us to pray in his name, meaning to pray as he does, and he assures us that God will listen to us just as God listens to Jesus. Naming brings power over the thing that is named. God gave the first people dominion over the animals by inviting them to name them. In the Harry Potter stories, that source of evil, Lord Voldemort, is called He Who Must Not Be Named by those people who fear him. But those who are willing to confront him, like Harry and Dumbledore, they do call him by name, and thus they can call him out. In the gospel story, Jesus is the one who can call those demons by name, and thus he calls them out of the man who is possessed. Jesus calls us, you and me, to name the evil in our world. Even when naming it, calling it evil, might provoke censure, might make you unpopular. When our friends are attacked, it's a bit easier to call out the bullies who are hurting the people that we love. It's harder when it's about someone we don't feel particularly related to. Jesus' audience would have found it really hard to relate to some Gentile man or to the economic loss of the herd that happened to the Gentile pig farmer when they ran into the water and were drowned. In fact, they may have been feeling a little like, well, you know, what did he expect? He's dealing with unclean animals that God doesn't approve of, so, you know, it's just what he should expect would happen to him. Jesus's audience looked at that, and like us, they were able to dismiss and cast out people who break laws or who are unable to live in society. Look at how we dismiss and cast out the people who break our immigration laws or people who engage in hate crimes. Some people break those laws because they're desperate. Some people express self-hate in outward and social ways, turning the hate for themselves that they project as blame onto the community, and turn that hate of themselves into violence toward the community. They are too dangerous to have loose in our communities. So what word does Jesus have for them? The man in our story has lost his community, been excluded because no one can restrain him. And so he's too dangerous and disruptive to have around. Jesus names the evil in him. And Jesus calls us to name the evil in the hate crimes, to name it in our own behaviors. But as we said, this is risky, because every time we want to take a risk, we make ourselves vulnerable. And the demons are there to remind us of every failure that we've had before, of every disappointment that we've experienced in the past. Reminded because we've allowed those demons of failure and disappointment to possess us. And it's not just one or two. Oh, no. They are legion. Calling them out by name negates their power, yeah, but not the damage that they do. There was collateral damage to that pig farmer in his loss because of Jesus' action, an action that brought healing and restoration to someone else. Getting rid of oppression comes with a cost. Some of it incurred by the innocent. Those of you that are in the military are especially aware of that. And I know that you carry it as a burden. Jesus moves to address the community damage by sending the healed man back into the community, not only for the healing that the restored relationships are going to bring to him, but as an agent of healing for those that were damaged by the demons that had possessed him. In dealing with the demons, Jesus has the pigs rush into the water and the demons are drowned. Now, I don't know if there's anything significant about that biblically, but theologically, we might see a parallel with the waters of our baptism, which have the power to drown our demons, ones that we acknowledge in holy baptism when we renounce them and all their works and all their ways before God and God's people gathered. And not only theologically, but in myth and in culture, water has long been an anti-demon substance. Think of Dorothy melting the Wicked Witch of the West by throwing a bucket of water over her. And the medieval dunking witch trials. And the use of holy water still today as a sign of cleansing from evil. When Jesus gives us our identity in baptism, and we are clothed with Christ, then we too are given a right mind and a right spirit to hear Jesus and to become his disciples. Healing for the man in the story meant restoration to community, and it meant the call to following Jesus. The healing waters of your baptism continue to give those same gifts to you, for which we can say, thanks be to God. Amen.